I was asked to talk on the language of ICT, information and communications technology, but I thought a more pertinent question might be, what has ICT done to language? I thought it was a reasonable thing to start at the beginning, and I think it's a fair bet that most of us began here. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. And from there, we've moved into a world of internet and mobile technologies that has spawned a whole range of acronyms and abbreviations and a way of using language that I shall cover in the next 25 minutes. So let's look at some acronyms. ICT itself, CMC, Computer Mediated Communication, LMS for Learning Management System or Content Management System. You probably have a USB in your pocket. You might set up RSS feeds. You probably have an ISP which provides you with internet into your home. And you wonder about the RAM of a computer when you buy a new one, and you certainly want HD or high definition when you're looking at a new television. We have OS for open source or operating system, 3G and 4G in the mobile world, and what on earth does the G actually stand for? We have KBs, MBs and GBs, BYOD, a very recent one, bring your own device, GPS, etc., etc. And what of the spelling? Well, a really crucial or central element in all of this, of course, is the concept of e-learning. Is it e-learning or e-learning? This is a graph from Google Trends. It's only data from 2007, and I didn't worry about checking out the more recent results, but you can see that over time, up until 2007, the blue line representing e-learning with a dash and e-learning without a dash has become closer together. So more and more people are using e-learning without the dash, and my guess is that current results would show that e-learning without the dash is becoming the more acceptable. Is it internet with a capital I, or is it internet lowercase? Interestingly, that in 2002, a New York Times column theorized the internet's been changing from proper noun to a generic term. And words for new technologies such as phonograph in the 19th century began life with a capital P. And as they become more general and accepted in the general language of a population, they become uncapitalized. More recently, organizations or newspapers and magazines like The Economist, Financial Times, and so on have started to use internet with a lowercase. And a further point of interest is that most organizations that are using internet with a lowercase I are outside of North America, but the gap here is also closing. Let's look at some changing vocabulary. Well, we have e-everything. Email, e-commerce, e-health, e-democracy, e-readers, e-living. And it seems that we can put e in front of anything. And it's like acknowledgement of a parallel universe that's virtual, where you can have an e-room, an e-person, an e-library, an e-desk, and no one bats an eyelid. So e as a prefix to indicate this other parallel universe is totally acceptable now. We surf the net or the web, we filter, we save, we install programs on our C drive or D drive, maybe E or F drive. We crop, we bookmark, we scan, we cut, we paste, we copy, we backup files and folders to our desktops, laptops, netbooks, notebooks and tablets. On our keyboards, we return, we shift, we control tab, go home, escape and enter chat rooms, forums, virtual worlds, and hope that we don't come across a virus or a worm or trolls or people who flame us on our Windows or Apple's computers. The word mobile has become a word, almost a universe in itself. A gig is no longer a place that people go to play music. And we've got hardware, software, of course, and there's even the term fleshware. And here's where it gets a little bit spooky. So if we can continue the biblical theme of John chapter 1, who says, "And the Word was made flesh and dwelt amongst us." We have iEverything, iPod, iPhone, iPad, iView, and a recent spate of ads on television here in Adelaide, and I imagine in other capital cities, is telling us that they, an insurance company, knows us really well, and they use the UI or UE as the name of their company. We have smart mobs, flash mobs, crowdsourcing. Microsoft has given us Word, PowerPoint, Excel. We have curation, port, resolution, screen time, wireless tagging. We can friend and unfriend. We can like. And we have Creative Commons. Creative Commons being a new system of licensing that enables us to use materials that we don't have to ask permission for, because the author of the content has given us permission up front. They have contributed material to the commons and licensed it Creative Commons accordingly. Interesting that the prefix cyber, which used to be attached to the internet, and we used to call it cyberspace, now seems to be associated with mainly with stuff that has a negative aspect, for example, cyber porn, cyber sex, cyber bullying, cyber fraud, cyber crime, cyber warfare. So anything to do with the dark side of the internet, interestingly now, attracts the prefix cyber. We have changing vocabulary in this cute little video with Ronnie Corbett. He walks into a fruit shop and complains about his BlackBerry not working, and I'll leave that for you to watch in your own time. We have digital footprints. We have the fail whale. The message that we get when Twitter, who uses a whale as its symbol, is over capacity. It doesn't happen so much anymore, but it certainly used to in the early days of Twitter, generated this phrase, the fail whale. We have new vocabulary. Let's look at some verbs. For example, you can IM someone, as in instant messaging. You can Facebook people when you get home. He wouldn't dare unfriend me. Oh, I tweeted about that last week. And have you Skyped your son lately? You can now Photoshop an image. And of course, have you Googled it? More vocabulary, new vocabulary. We download software, we upload files, we boot up, we have netiquette, there's podcasts, we worry about bytes, whether they're kilo, megabytes, gigabytes, or terabytes. And interestingly, someone has actually calculated how much space it would take if you documented your entire life with photographs, videos, text, and audio. You would take up approximately 4 terabytes of life. And I can imagine sometime in the future people would say, look, it's a real shame that that person died so young. They were only 2 terabytes old. Of course, we use programs with a different meaning now, like Twitter, Facebook, Google, Moodle, YouTube, Flickr. We have apps on our Android or a Kindle. We have avatars, blogs, wikis, tweets, Twitter, geeks and nerds. We have social media, social networking, hashtags, Wi-Fi, hi-fi, lo-fi, high-res, low-res, pixels. And we have curious words like brick juicing and backdooring. Brick juicing, charging a battery. Backdooring, illegal hacking. And words like synchronous and asynchronous, which may have existed before, have taken on a brand new meaning. And I'd like to have a quick look at this communication access here, particularly in the world of education. This is of interest because in the old days, pre-internet, most of the communication that happened in a classroom was oral and synchronous. We would then set tasks that people did for homework outside of class. This was written and asynchronous, the most structured form of communication. With new internet technologies, we now have new possibilities where we've got, for example, written, synchronous, and this is SMS or instant messaging. This is spontaneous and this is minimalist, as it must be, because speed is of the essence in communicating in a synchronous written space. If you're concerned about this, what some see as mangling of language, I suggest you read David Crystal's Texting, The Great Debate. It really sets minds at rest about the role that texting is playing in language, and he would argue that much of what is happening with the use of texting or SMS is simply an extension of what we've always done. This is an example from a poetry competition sponsored by The Guardian, and it reads thus. His eyes are Bunsen burner blue, his hair like iron filings, with AC/DC going through. I sit by him in chemistry. It splits my atoms when he smiles at me. Obviously, this makes a mockery of traditional spelling, but it's almost at the point now where this is an acceptable genre. If The Guardian is sponsoring poetry competitions in this new language, who are we to say it's no longer valid? This idea, borrowed from Jonathan Finkelstein but used by many other people, illustrates that we don't actually need to spell correctly. If you look at this text here on The Amazing Human Mind, you can read this without much trouble, because in this text, every word has the first letter and the last letter in its correct place, but all the words in between are scrambled, but it turns out it doesn't matter. So spelling is not absolutely essential for correct understanding of a text. Seen last week in a shopping centre here in Adelaide, objects that have come out of the world of SMS, short messaging service. I saw LOL for sale. It was an object that you could buy in the shop. Or Oh My God, OMG. So these items are now becoming physical representations in the normal world outside of the context of SMS or instant messaging. Crystal writes in his books, Texting the Great Debate, that abbreviations are nothing new. We all grew up with RSVP, PTO, please turn over, PO for post office, BYO for bring your own, and so on. So there has always been a wealth of abbreviations. It's a natural process that humans do to language. We abbreviate things. So what's happening in the SMS, IM, instant messaging space, nothing new and not really anything to worry about. Let's talk about a quite serious notion of multiliteracies. To be literate these days means a lot more than just being able to read and write. And the word literacy now gets a lot of tags in front of it. We have digital literacy, we have information literacy, critical literacy, media literacy. Can you, for example, create a video? We have visual literacy. So literacy has moved beyond the ability to simply read and write. And so the phrase multiliteracy has been coined. It's sometimes called transliteracy and can be defined as the ability to read, write, and interact across a range of platforms, tools, and media through handwriting, print, TV, radio, and film to social networks. A course that you might like to examine is a course run by a friend of mine, Vance Stevens, in Abu Dhabi, and he calls the course Goodbye Gutenberg, and it runs each year in January. A really wonderful example of a multi-literate human is this short video here from Howard Rheingold. So I urge you to have a look at this, where he takes a snippet of information from Twitter, moves it into an annotation tool, where he expands on the comment with his own notes and then places it in the text of a draft of a book he's writing. So it's an example of taking what's considered to be a really trite medium of Twitter, but taking that information and turning it into a significant portion of a draft of an academic text. an example of a highly multi-literate person in action. The notion of folksonomy is important in all of this. Folksonomy itself is a new word. It's of course a take or another aspect of the word taxonomy. And when we tag content that we put up on the internet, we are contributing to a folksonomy. We tag blogs, photos, videos, links, what we might call bookmarks, and we even use hashtags for events. And we are now organizing knowledge and information according to our own personal Dewey system. So rather than walking into a library and walking through the bookshelves and looking for 974 or 956 or 832, which were categorized by Dewey to a particular system that he devised, we are now encouraged to create our own system of categorizing content according to our own tags, so we can find the information again, and more importantly, that others who are looking for information can find our content according to our tags. This is the tag cloud for this presentation. So what I've done here is taken every word from this PowerPoint and put it into a tool called Wordle and asked it to produce a tag cloud. And words that are in larger text are words that are used more often. And it's a really brilliant way to illustrate the concept of tagging, where Wordle will present a tag cloud for you. This is my Flickr tag cloud. Works on the same principle. The bigger the text, the more images I have tagged with that tag. So you can see Port Adelaide's quite a big one there. The word sign is quite a big one, as is sunset. This is not a live example, but if you clicked on any of these which are hyperlinks, it would take you to all the images that I have tagged with items there in that tag cloud, and you can see the URL there if you'd like to follow that and give it a try for yourself. We have multiple channels of communication, and a person who's written about this at great length is Sherry Turkle in her book Alone Together. This graphic here, this infographic, there's another new word, is an example of these things that appear on the internet. No one really quite knows where it came from. It's unattributed, but it's useful for having a look at the levels of intimacy in today's communication. It rates face-to-face talking as 10, that is the most intimate form of communication, all the way back down to Twitter at 1 as the least intimate form of communication. But whether or not you agree with the weightings given in this infographic, it's useful to prompt your thinking about the various channels we all have available to us today and what function they serve, because they all do have their place. What tool do you use to break up, for example, or announce a death? And Sherry Turkle tells this wonderful story in her book of teenagers, I think about 15 years old, two girls, they're good friends. Now, one of the girls rings the other to tell her that the brother of a third friend of theirs has died. Now, the first girl who received these news, of course, is really upset because someone has died. Just as importantly, she's furious that her friend announced that information to her synchronously in real time on the telephone. And when asked about it by Sherry Turkle, she explains quite eloquently that it's not okay, it's not appropriate to dump that kind of heavy news on someone without giving them the chance to process it and come back later if you had instant messaged her or texted her on the phone. She might have met hours or days later and be composed and come to terms with the death of this brother of a friend of theirs. So this is profound. Whether you like it or not, whether it's right or wrong, there are a group of people now who are coming through who don't see it as appropriate that you announce a death via a telephone call, because it doesn't give you the chance to assimilate and process that information, and you have to deal with it in real time while you're speaking to the other person, something that people of my generation are quite used to and would see as normal. So is this language of social media a cult or a norm? It's probably moving from one to the other. I think things in their early days, words like poke, tweet, lol, or laugh out loud, and I have heard lol said in spoken or oral communication, will eventually become the norm. Interesting to compare it with the Gartner hype cycle, which is a way of graphing the track of a new piece of technology, where when it first enters society, it tends to spike to the peak of inflated expectations. It then drops back down into the trough of disillusionment. But as it becomes the norm, it enters this plateau of productivity. What's really interesting in this space, of course, is some of these new words, these languages, these acronyms will disappear into oblivion. And which ones, whether it's poke or tweet or lol, we don't know. But some of the words that are now becoming the norm will 20 years from now have gone. And I can think of a lot of words from back in the 80s and the 70s, which used to be quite common parlance then, have disappeared. This is the nature of language. So it's a wonderful time to be alive and to be someone who's tracking the intersection of technology and language, because it's a very rich and vibrant area, changing by the day and fascinating to watch. And where it goes, we don't really know. Thank you for listening.